Pascal, I'm going to come to you first on this. I mean, Public Accounts Committee next week, he's been invited to give evidence. There's dispute over whether he should or not. Members of your own party today concerned that he won't be legally protected. What's your own view on whether he should appear or not?
Well, I'm a former member of the Public Accounts Committee myself, so I have an appreciation of the work that the PAC are doing at the moment. I do believe the Public Accounts Committee have a role in relation to all of this. The reason why I do is that the Controller and Auditor General, who is a completely neutral and independent body, has produced up to 3 reports on this general issue. So the Public Accounts Committee clearly have a role in relation to the overall issue, which they're following at the moment. In relation to the meeting that may or may not take place next Thursday, and that's completely a matter for the Public Accounts Committee, I do think there's a number of areas that need to be thought through in the run-up to this. That I think some of my colleagues are looking at. The first one is as you know, anybody who goes in front of the Public Accounts Committee has access to either full or qualified privilege. And we may or may not see allegations being made of alleged criminal behaviour against individuals. And I believe people need to think through how that will be handled, what's the right way of doing it and so on.
But arguably we're in this situation because the systems put in place to deal with people who want to raise issues within the Garda Force did not work, as John Wilson said. The internal procedures whereby you bring alleged impropriety to the attention of the authorities within the force, those systems didn't work, according to him.
And I guess that's why I opened up by making clear that I do believe the Public Accounts Committee has a role in relation to all of this. They're now into a very, very specific space, which is new area for an Oireachtas, for this Public Accounts Committee, regarding the potential alleging of claims against other members of the Garda Síochána. It's a new area, and I do believe it's important that thought be given to how that could be done within an Oireachtas committee, and how that is compatible with the existence of privilege.
But if you reverse back a couple of steps, so John Wilson and his colleague make this complaint internally and suddenly they're not allowed to use the poll system in the guards. I mean, there's something very wrong there if you are doing what you believe to be the right thing and you're penalised in your job for doing that.
Yeah, again, that's why I said at the start, I do believe there's a role of the Public Accounts Committee for them in all of this. I heard somebody make the point there during the week that, you know, anybody who's looking to speak truth to power, that is quite an awesome responsibility and course of action for anybody to pursue. And we have seen both the role and the consequences of this for individuals in every other walk of life in our country in recent years.
What do you think of what Martin Callanan had to say at the Public Accounts Committee? The language that he used, personally disgusted, for example, one of the phrases that he used that raised a lot of ire and comment over the last couple of days.
Well, as a member of the Public Accounts Committee, I have questioned Commissioner Callanan myself at different points in relation to his role as accounting officer for the Garda Síochána. I mean, you know, the language that he uses is very much a matter for himself. But what I do understand is the Garda Síochána are a different organisation to other organisations that come in front of the Public Accounts Committee. They have a very privileged role as being custodians of law and order within our country that confers upon them both great power and great obligation. And that's why I do believe that it's a new space for the Public Accounts Committee.
Would you think his authority is undermined as he does?
Well, that's very much a matter for him. I mean, if I looked at the work that the PAC have done to date on this issue, they have tethered everything very firmly back to the work of the Controller and Auditor General. What I'm also conscious of is that there's a new body of law already in place, the Protected Disclosures Act of 2013, that gives new legal protection to people who want to make claims within their organisation. And an issue that thought does need to be given to is, are we creating a situation here in which the people exercising their right to go to members of the Oireachtas, and Mr Wilson is correct, he does have that right under the piece of legislation that he quoted. What impact does that then have on the machinery and instruments that have been set up in the first place to do with these claims.
Okay.
But I make all these comments, Claire, like in the spirit of saying again, I believe the PAC has a role here. I was on it myself. I saw the work that it does. And if we have learned anything at all from what we've gone through in every other walk of life, it's that people do have a right to make points. The legislation that I made reference to earlier on, the Protected Disclosures Act of 2013, does give people who make such claims much protection in terms of protection against civil action.
Would it be regrettable, in your view, if John Wilson and his colleague were prevented from giving evidence before the Public Accounts Committee, if a legal action was taken, in other words, by the Garda Commissioner?
Well, you see, you're bringing me into space there now that I need to be very careful in relation to, because firstly, we have the Garda Síochána Corner that are completely independent, politically independent, and also clearly so in operational matters. And also we have a committee of the House of the Oireachtas of our Parliament, which is completely separate from government. And it's not my role as a member of state or even as a TD to try and interfere with the decisions that either people make. What I say again is that the PAC have a role in relation to all of this.
Okay, and you've said that quite clearly.
What I believe careful thought needs to be given to is how allegations of an individual nature that could be of a criminal nature, how could they be dealt fairly with everybody?
Okay.
And what impact will this have on future claims under the new legal architecture that's now in place for these matters?
Okay, and we're getting lots of reaction on this. A listener says it takes much more courage to be a whistleblower, an informer, a snitch or a tout than to be a Garda or a soldier. Is it not two-faced for the Commissioner to encourage criminals to be informers and try to stop a Garda from whistleblowing? John Hannigan, you're in our Waterford studio. What did you make of what John Wilson had to say, and where do you think this should go from here?
Well, first of all, could I just take up a comment the Minister made regarding the language that the Commissioner used? I think he made the point that it wasn't important. I think it's very important and very relevant. Just a quick point. He used language, remarks yesterday, that my force. It isn't his force, it's our force. Also, these people in the Public Accounts Committee. I think he should be cognizant of the fact that everybody in society is interested in what happens with the Gardaí. But I just want to make, if I could, I think that the Commissioner is incorrect in stating that the PAC is not the forum to consider these accusations. And I'll tell you why. The PSA, it is the duty of the Public Accounts Committee to investigate how public money is spent or lost. And if you think about this, each cancellation of a fixed charge notice, the cost is at least €60 to the state. And it has actually been suggested that the Exchequer was losing 100,000 per month through notice cancelled. And also, just when you spoke about the Controller and Auditor General, he reported that one in five charge notices, around 42,000 a year, I think, resulted in no financial penalty. But what's interesting to note is that the CNAG figures were far higher than those of the O'Mahony investigation.
This is internal Garda investigation.
And I think that has to be explained, and probably explained at the PSE.
Can I put it to you, John, though, that the PAC, as you say, has a right, and the Minister agrees with that, has a right and a duty here to investigate. But if an independent inquiry had have been held, we perhaps wouldn't be in this grey area that we appear to be heading for this week.
Probably not. And listening to John Wilson, I think he's correct. We probably do at this stage. Everything has become so controversial, and there is such a volume of opinion, and statements are made and reissued and then questioned, that I think it makes it difficult for TDs to promise accountability and transparency. If the Garda Commissioner, for instance, is threatening legal advice over the two whistleblowers being brought before the PAC, absolutely a public inquiry would have been the way forward. We're at a position now where I'm not too sure if that's going to happen. The question now is, will those two whistleblowers be allowed to come before the PAC? And I think it's important, and it's an imperativeness for accountability for all of society. They seem to be two honest, decent people to me. I'm not saying everything they're saying are correct, but I think we have a right to hear them out and hear what they have to say. I think this is important for accountability and transparency in our society.
Fergus Finlay, what does this week say about the culture within the Garda Síochána, do you think, as an observer?
Well, I think if you know anything at all about Irish history, it's impossible not to have an enormous amount of respect for the Guards and what they do and how they do it. I mean, you know, we're this week celebrating, that's the wrong word, the anniversary of the murder of a guard in the defence of his own community. Mm-hmm. And I think it's impossible for those reasons, not to admire the Gardaí. But I think there are three fundamental principles involved here. The first principle is that whistleblowing is an uncomfortable, sometimes dangerous public service. And it has to be seen that way. It has to be seen and acknowledged as an act of public service, irrespective of its motivation, irrespective of background or any of those kind of things. Whistleblowing puts things into the public domain that otherwise would be swept under the carpet. The second thing I think that's a principle that's involved here is that as much as one admires the guards, it has to be an accountable force. It has to be accountable in a democracy to democratic systems. It cannot be described, as the commissioner described it yesterday, as, you know, in language that suggests this force is my personal property, or I and only I am responsible for the force. We all know that there have been instances in the past where the Gardaí have had to be brought to account in respect of different situations. I was involved in one of them myself years ago, and there have been others. And you know, you undermine democracy if you don't regard the guards as accountable. And the third principle is that the Public Accounts Committee not just has a right, but has a duty to establish the facts. Here. They have a duty, because the Controller and Auditor General has reported on it, to follow that report, to interview whomever they think is necessary to interview, and to make a judgment to the best of their ability about what's right and what's wrong in relation to this issue. And I don't think it does anybody, least of all the guards, any service to be using language like this is disgusting or how dare they or anything of that.
Well, you
kind.
Wouldn't be very encouraged to blow the whistle anywhere else in official Ireland having heard that, would
no,
you?
No, and I think there's a really fundamental misunderstanding in what the Commissioner said yesterday about the difficulties involved in this. You're never going to have thousands and thousands of people blowing the whistle in organisations. You know, if you work in an organisation for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years or whatever it is, you develop a really strong sense of loyalty to that organisation. And sometimes that can become, you know, my organisation is right, whether it's right or wrong. And particularly in organisations where people are putting their lives at risk, you know, where they're operating in an atmosphere of danger, there's an even stronger instinct for self-protection and for minding your comrades and minding your colleagues and all that kind of thing. So the whistleblower in that situation is somebody who, from the moment they make that decision, they're living with intense pressure and intense difficulty. But, you know, we'd never got to the bottom of some of the things that happened in Ireland without people like Jim Gogarty, for example, who was in turns reviled and admired, who was a man who had an axe to grind, who had a beef against his employer, and who, partly for that reason, blew the whistle. But in blowing the whistle that led to the Mahon Tribunal and so on, he performed a very, very considerable public service. Mm-hmm. And we can't forget that.
OK, I just want to remind people that if you want to hear more from John Wilson, a documentary which was broadcast last weekend on the Documentary Hour here on Radio 1 is available on the RTE Player. It's made by Robert Mulheron. It's called The Garda Who Limped. You can also download the Doc on One app. It is worth a listen. Mary, just to come to you on the Public Accounts Committee element of this, it's had the starring role in the Houses of the Oireachtas over the last while. Could this be the undoing of its success story, given that there seems to be some division as to how this should be handled?
I don't think so. I think the Public Accounts Committee have actually conducted themselves very well all along. The individual TDs from various parties have proven themselves to be very independent in how they're examining a number of issues, from the CRC to their questioning of Irish Water to this these allegations by these Gardaí. I know there was some disagreement, which has sort of been going on for a while since we actually revealed in the Examiner, I think back in November, that this box had been presented to the committee. And there was a lot of discussion within the committee of how this information should be dealt with. And I think primary among their concerns was that the Garda himself could have the protection needed, because if he goes before the committee, he has limited legal privilege and he could expose himself to criminality actually by naming people in the committee. So there has been discussion and they've sought legal advice, but I don't think there's any great split in the Public Accounts Committee about this. I think they're just treading very, very carefully on how they proceed here, because they know they're on very difficult ground. The whistleblower who is interested in giving evidence next Thursday is getting his legal advice over the weekend, and he's taking a lot of legal advice so that he can be very satisfied that he will appear before the committee
and be protected.
Yeah, and not name any names. And of course, the committee themselves need to protect the committee, because they don't want to damage the reputation of the committee by any individuals being named before it, or anything else that might prejudice any other proceedings.
Mm-hmm. In fairness, you could say that John Wilson has practiced in the legal area himself for long enough. I mean, we spoke to him at length this morning, and he certainly didn't name any names when we were talking to him. Another listener says, how do we know that not one of the other 12,998 Gardaí don't feel the same way? Just because the Garda Commissioner says so, it's just high-handed arrogance to make a statement like that. What about the, just on the wider issue of how the Garda Commissioner is perceived in light of what happened on Thursday? Do you think some of his statements were ill-advised, Mary?
Yeah, I think the way he spoke at the committee might have opened up a lot of people's eyes about a perceived culture in the force now. This attitude that these are my officers, they won't make allegations against each other, this is my force, and that
but
anyone...
But some people would argue that the Gardaí is a hierarchical force, that that's how it operates, and that's how it's a disciplined force. That's how it's been described.
Yeah, but Mr. Callanan almost seemed not to accept, you know, the function of whistleblowers. He says, my office door is always open, they could have come to me. But there was an internal process in place, which he said that they did use, but that clearly didn't work properly in this case. So I think it also, you know, raises questions as to how Alan Shatter, the minister, has dealt with this, because that internal procedure, the two Gardaí in question, used the confidential recipient mechanism back in April 2012. That under the laws of under which that was set up, that information then goes to the minister. The minister in this instance gave the information back to the Garda Commissioner, and he appointed the Assistant Commissioner, John O'Mahony, to carry out the report. Now, Minister Shatter, who prides himself in being a very reforming minister, I think in this case, you know, he chose not to pass that information on to an independent body who could investigate it. He didn't pass it on to the Garda Ombuds Commission. And I think his handling of it was sort of, you know, reminiscent of a time maybe where you know, protecting institutions comes to the forefront of exposing the truth at any cost. Okay. And also the members of the Public Accounts Committee wanted to know how often this confidential recipient process has been used, because it's a very important process, because it was put in place after the Morris Tribunal and it's the only one Garda whistleblowers have. And the Department of Justice won't release figures on how often that has been used, which I think is important public information, because it could shine a light on how successful or not it is. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to leave that one there. You did mention reform and reforming ministers, and that's where we're going to go next, because as many people will know, the Reform Alliance is meeting at the RDS in Dublin today. We're going to speak to Lucinda Creighton after this.
Whatever kids want to be, Pharmaton Kitty Crunchy can help give them the best start.
I want to be a rugby player.
You have to grow big and strong.
A scientist.
You have to focus.
I'll be both.
Tasty crunchy tablets from Pharmaton Kitty, Irish mum's number one choice of kids' multivitamins and minerals in pharmacy. Pharmaton, a healthy start every day the Kitty Crunchy way.
25 Irish films, 13 galas and special presentations, 80 international features, 16 Irish and international short films, 26 Irish and international documentaries, 20 workshops and special events, more than 100 international guests, over 13,000 minutes of film. The Jemison Dublin International Film Festival runs throughout Dublin from February 13th to 23rd. Book online at jdiff.com in association with RTE Radio 1.
Are you a startup or existing business? Have you been declined credit? Good news. Microfinance Ireland may be able to help you. We provide loans from €2,000 up to €25,000 to viable small businesses with less than 10 employees. To find out more, visit our website at microfinanceireland.ie or talk to your local county or city enterprise board. Microfinance Ireland, supporting jobs in the community. Microfinance Ireland is a not-for-profit lender and is part of the government's Action Plan for Jobs. Lending terms and conditions apply.
This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. Joining me on the programme today, we have the Minister of State for European Affairs, Pascal Donoghue, Mary Regan, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish Examiner, John Halligan, Independent TD is in our Waterford studio, and Fergus Finlay, the CEO of Barnardos, is with us here in Dublin. And we move now to the long-awaited Reform Alliance meeting. It's underway at the RDS today, led by former Minister Lucinda Creighton, of course. Seven members of the Oireachtas, who were members of Fine Gael, and have come together to discuss a reform agenda. Most of them left or were cast out of the party over their refusal to toe the party line when it came to the abortion legislation. Mary Regan, you were there earlier on today. What was going on?
Well, it was certainly impressive in terms of the crowds that it attracted. There were more than 1,000 people there. It filled the hall, which held more than 1,000 people, and there was also people standing. I suppose what struck me was that the sort of demographic of the people that were there, it was mostly pensioners, older people, and majority male, rather than the sort of event that attracted a lot of young, you know, people who were interested in changing the way politics happens. The discussion on reform was very general in terms of they, you know, spoke about the great disconnect between politics and people, and we all know that's happening already. They gave out about single-seat constituencies, the party whip system, all that sort of stuff. Very few specifics on what they'd actually change or, you know. And also they spoke about dynasty politics and people getting seats from members of their family, which, of course, you know, there was the person who opened that conference was Billy Timmins, who you know, had taken his father's seat in Wicklow. So then the floor was opened to members who'd turned up for this event. The first person that spoke I thought was interesting because his speech related to Fine Gael's position on abortion and how they broke a promise that they'd made to the electorate on abortion.
So the perception is that that's where this is coming from.
So that kind
from.
Of indicated to me that was, you know, why a lot okay. of people had turned up.
Lucinda Creighton is on the line now and she's taken a break from the meeting to speak to us. So Lucinda, we'll come to you now. You're very welcome. Thank you for taking our call. So have you got a hall full of OAPs there?
No, I think Mary might have been at a different conference than the one that I'm at, because I think certainly there are there is a much heavier predominance of men than women. That's pretty apparent. But there is a very big age mix. I've met lots of people from my age group and younger, and lots of older people as well. So it's very mixed, actually.
So what was going to make this successful for you? I mean, were you going to base its success or otherwise on the turnout? And if so, are you happy or the quality of debate?
Well, I think it's a combination. I mean, obviously, it's nice to see a full hall, we certainly have that. But I think, you know, the fact that people have come who have actually put a lot of thought into the sort of changes and reforms that they would like to see. Many of them have sent in and formulated their ideas in advance, and a lot of people anxious to speak from the floor. You know, we're obviously limited in time, but I mean, there's been a very wide spectrum of people contributing. The health session is just over. I only heard some of that because I was sort of in and out. The political reform session this morning, chaired by Tom McGurk, I mean, it just literally threw up a multitude of ideas for political reform, some of which we've heard before, some of which we haven't. And that's the purpose. And if, I mean, for me, the benchmark is, you know, do we come out of this with striking ideas on reforming our republic that can be, you know, advanced by us potentially as members of the Oireachtas.
But the first contribution you had today was in relation to the abortion legislation, and there may be a perception out there that you're coming from a conservative social agenda. Is that an issue, do you think, for you? Is that a concern?
I don't think it's an issue at all. I mean, you know, we've never made any secret of the fact. I mean, everybody knows why a number of us were expelled from Fine Gael Parliamentary Party, because we upheld a commitment that the party made before the last election, which the party chose ultimately to renege on. There's no secret about that. There actually has been virtually no discussion about abortion here today, because other issues are exercising people and other issues exercise us as well. I mean,
well, three of your members,
being honest with you, are the media, not the people here.
Okay,
and,
but there is a valid story on the Irish Times website today. Three of your Oireachtas members went on that trip to Washington, organised and funded by the Pro-Life Family and Life Group, and they are reportedly seeking donations of up to 7,000 from people in Ireland who they perceive to be amenable. I mean, what's your view on that? I mean, it's difficult to deny that there are three people there with you today who went on that trip, which was funded by this organisation. What does that say?
Well, firstly, I'm a Democrat, and I believe that any organisation which wishes to organise itself and campaign on any issue is entitled to do so in this space. I think it's interesting timing in the Irish Times. I'm not surprised by it. I haven't seen the Irish Times reporting, for example, on trips that are organised by pro-choice groups and which members of the Oireachtas, including members of the Labour Party and some from the United Left Alliance, participated in. But, you know, there's a clear coordination and timing involved in the article that appears in the Irish Times today. So I don't really see that there's any difference between a lobby organisation on one side of an argument or on another side of an argument raising funds.
And you're happy for Reform Alliance members to travel to Washington on a trip paid for by a lobby group?
They can travel wherever they want. I mean, I think it's welcome that members of the Oireachtas would actually try to inform themselves on issues before they vote on legislation rather than simply walking in and pushing buttons without any contemplation or consideration of what they're doing, without any accountability for what they do, and without answering to the public for it. So, The organisation that you mentioned raises funds, presume it is within the law. I think every organisation that does so has to operate within the law. And it's not for me or anybody to instruct members of the Oireachtas as to, you know, whether they participate in educational trips. There was a big delegation that went to Taiwan just the week before last. There are members of the Oireachtas who travel on all sorts of delegations to inform themselves, and that's their choice and they're welcome to do it.
You're quoted in one of the papers today saying that you will run in the next election possibly under the Reform Alliance banner. Now, does that mean we're closer to political party at this stage?
No, I mean, I've said it several times. I intend running at the next election. The likelihood is, as an independent TD, aligned to the Reform Alliance. I've said that several times. There's absolutely nothing new in that. But, you know, I don't know. The next election is more than two years away. I'm much more interested in contributing to policy development, to good legislation and to good politics over the next 2 years. I mean, we're just over halfway through the lifetime of this Dáil and this Seanad. I'm not fixated with the next election. I know many politicians may very well be. That's never been my focus. I try to focus on doing my job as best I can in the present. I'm elected for a 5-year mandate and I will try to do my best.
Are you disappointed? Are you disappointed that some of the people that you approached, you didn't get the Shane Rosses, Stephen Donnelly, Padraig Tobin?
You see, I didn't approach them. That's again.
Well, you did approach Padraig Tobin because he told me on this programme 2 weeks ago.
Certainly did not. But that's not true, actually.
He's convinced that you did. He said it was an indirect approach, but he was quite convinced that it happened.
Firstly, Claire, I can tell you I don't make indirect approaches. If I want to approach somebody, I approach them myself. I didn't hear Pather say that. It's not true. We sent an email to all Oireachtas members earlier this week, or towards the end of last week, and every Oireachtas member was invited to attend. I didn't approach anybody in particular. The only person that I discussed this with was Stephen Donnelly, actually, before Christmas, who expressed an interest in attending the conference. I didn't approach anybody else, and I certainly didn't approach Father Tobin, so that's just not true.
What were Stephen Donnelly's reasons for not taking part?
I have no idea, being honest. I haven't actually discussed it with him in the last couple of weeks. I haven't had any opportunity to speak to him. But
would you still like to get him on board if possible?
Look, I've said, and I think we've made it very clear, that we are open. We're open-minded. We're open to working with anybody who wishes to pursue a similar agenda on the kind of issues that are being raised here today in terms of reforming the health service, reforming the economic sphere, and particularly focusing on political reform. I've absolutely no discriminatory views about that. I'll work with any member of the Oireachtas, but I will repeat that I did not either directly or indirectly approach Padraig Tobin or anybody else
in
the Oireachtas conference.
So that unfortunately
is a figment of somebody's imagination.
All right, so. Lucinda, thank you for joining us. I know you're busy. We'll let you get back to that meeting in the RDS. John Halligan, can I come to you? You probably received that email inviting you along, but are you working on another group?
Well, first of all, can I say that I did receive an email. It was a casual email. I wasn't approached to join. I had breakfast with Peter Matches, whom I like, on Thursday, and he didn't invite me to come, and I wouldn't have gone anyway.
Were you disappointed?
No, I wasn't. I was delighted that I wasn't asked. I wouldn't be interested whatsoever. Just if I could just make a couple of points before I come to the question you've asked me. That this group speaks about reform, but they opposed reform. They were formed in opposition to reform in the Dáil. Particularly, it has been stated that they're a single issue party. That's what they formed out of on the abortion debate.
Also, they're very keen to stress that they're not.
Well, if you look at some of the speakers they've had this morning, from what I can gather, we had someone speaking about Christian values, which isn't entitled to speak about. We had Philip Bond, who's an advisor to David Cameron, I believe was there. All the indications are that they will become maybe a bluer form of Fine Gael. And I'm not too sure if people in Ireland want another right-wing party or another left-wing party. I think that there's a growing number of people who are disenchanted with politics and there's a huge appetite for change. But I'm not too sure if it's another party is the way forward.
So what about yourself then? Are you putting together a group?
Well, we've been speaking with a number of people. I won't deny that.
I've spoken
to Catherine Murphy. I've mentioned it to Stephen Donnelly. I've mentioned it to Shane Ross. I've Thomas Pringle and so on. But we haven't. I don't want to tell a lie here. I'll tell it as it is. And I've always done that. We haven't formed any group. We haven't attempted to form any group. What we're trying to do is maybe get a common flat platform for the local elections and involve the best aspects of Irish life, which is the community, which are decent, practical achievers in the community. And I think that that's what people are looking for. I'm not too sure if they want
It's a bit wishy-washy, though, isn't it? I mean, what does that offer people?
Well, I think what it offers people, like parties compromise the policies of the individual, and we all know that. And that's exactly why Lucinda Creed and Dennis Nocton and Peter Matches and so on left the Fine Gael party, because they had a problem with them on a particular issue.
But you're always telling me, the last couple of times I've spoken to you about how great independents are, how well you did in the next election, how well you'll do in the last election and so on. But yet you're interested in forming a grouping. I'm just wondering why.
Yeah, well, maybe
is it a strength in numbers thing?
No, it's not exactly. And if I can just refer to what you said, the independents, I think, were elected on about 16%. And we've been consistently polling very high.
I know, and I've said that you say all the time that independents are great and they're doing really well. But I'm just wondering why now you're interested in forming a grouping if independent life is going so well.
Well, if I can clarify, first of all, I say that, but it's the people give their view in opinion polls also say it. 20% of them at one stage, 23%. What I am saying is that I think people are disenchanted with politics. If you're disenchanted with politics, usually you're disenchanted with the policies of parties. And maybe, I say maybe, there is, and I'm not trying to be lukewarm about this, I would tell you if we'd had a meeting, which we haven't had, but maybe there's a way forward with a group of independents who represent about 25% of the people, of the voters in this country, to form a common platform, maybe for the local elections, to put some sort of purpose of reform to people. We're not tied up, as I say, with parties. I made the point and I reissue it, restated that parties compromise the policies of the individual, and that's what part of being a party is. So maybe there's a way for a community platform with independence, with no ideological attachment. I don't think it's important anymore in Irish politics as it was if you're ideologically to the right or ideologically to the left. Middle ground is what's required.
I'm just going to press the pause button there for a moment. We're going to come back to this discussion after this quick break. You're back with Saturday with Clare Byrne. Minister Pascal Donoghue, you heard Lucinda there and John Halligan. You feel sorry for your former colleagues out in the rain down at the RDS trying to cobble together a political party?
Well, it appears they're out of the rain and surrounded by a large number of people. I wish them the very best of luck. I wish anybody who wants to get in further involved in political life and putting forward ideas, I know it's a difficult thing to do. I wish them well.
You don't wish any of them were back?
I would like to see, I think I've said this already to you, that those people who left our party over a particular issue, I've always wanted to see them come back into the party at some point in the future. I do hope that happens to Brian Walsh. From what I've heard of the colleagues that are involved in the movement today, it does appear that they don't have an interest in coming back at a point in the near future. I am struck by a slight inconsistency about all this, that for all of the criticism that takes place of political parties by some of these individuals, there does appear to be a wealth of efforts afoot at the moment to form political parties, but not to call them political parties.
Are you referring in particular to what John Halligan said before we took that break?
Well, but I wouldn't be critical of anything John is doing for a moment, as I would be, nor would I be of Lucinda. But I think there is an understanding amongst individual politicians that by coming together and grouping their efforts, it does allow them to achieve more for the people that they represent. But that does involve compromises and consequences. And I think one of the issues that my some of my former colleagues and current friends within the Reform Alliance will have to look at is they have a question of form and they have a question of function. The question of form is, are they a political party or not? They'll answer that in their own time. Question of function is going to be, where do they stand on the key issues? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're looking to be the right, further to the right on economic policy, our country has just gone through the largest budgetary adjustment of nearly any developed country since World War II. Are they saying they want more of that? If they're looking for tax cuts, well, that's an important point that we have to look at. But we have to understand how this is going to be funded, because we have seen the vast damage that the shimmer of unfunded tax cuts can do to our country in terms of narrowing our tax base and not being able to pay for public services that people need.
Okay.
And I'm sure that their questions in the fullness of time they'll answer.
All right. So that's if they continue or if they do become a political force in this country. They may not have to answer them at all. Fergus Finney, the Reform Alliance, if it is a political movement, if that's what it's going to become, do you think it's starting in the right place in the RDS? Not geographically, I mean, but at that level. Do you think it needs to start at a more local level? Is that where political movements need to begin?
Well, I think it's starting in the wrong place because it increasingly looks like some kind of cute attempt to mobilise public opinion and monopolise media coverage without actually doing anything. I was at a brilliant production of Macbeth the other night in the Smockelly Theatre. Lest I be accused of a conflict of interest, my daughter was producing it, but it was brilliant nevertheless. Macbeth delivers a really powerful speech at the end of that play where he talks about tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And every time I listen to Lucinda Creighton, I'm thinking, my God, would she ever get on with it? And of course, that speech ends up with the phrase sound and fury signifying nothing. I mean, I'm totally in favour of wide political discourse. I wish to God we could introduce some other stuff into the political discourse. Like, for example, you know, are we going to try and rebuild any concept of equality in this country as we come out of a bailout? But I wish to God they would just bloody well get on with it and stop trying to look like, you know...
Well, it's toe in the water stuff, would you say?
Well, the toe is, in my view, looking very, very wrinkled at this stage. It looks like a prune, it's so wrinkled. I think it's time they took the toe out of the water, put their hands in their back pockets and actually got on with it. I mean, you can't... Apart from anything else, you know, Lucinda talks about running under the banner of the Reform Alliance. She can't put the words Reform Alliance on a political poster unless she registers as a political party. And I think it's really long past time they stopped faffing about and made a decision one way or the other.
Look ahead, Mary. Where is this all going to be in 6 or 12 months' time? Crystal ball time.
Well, if I can go beyond the Reform Alliance a little bit, I think the whole notion of reform at the moment is a very attractive one because there is this big, great... I mean, at the last general election when we supposedly got our democratic revolution, the programme for government did say that it wasn't just bad politics that had brought us to where we were, it was bad political system which allowed bad governance. And I think that notion might still stand because this government hasn't delivered on the sort of political reform that was needed. there's a couple of groups out there. John Halligan was talking about bringing a group together. Catherine Murphy, the independent TD, is very strong on political reform. So is Roisin Shortall. There's some government Fine Gael backbenchers who are very strong on political reform. So I think the reform notion is a strong one. But I think for Lucinda and her alliance, they'll just wait and buy their time. They can't set up a party now because it would involve having to run people in the local elections and European elections, and they probably aren't
ready for that.
But just one speaker who stood up today had a very interesting quote. He was actually, I think, the second or third speaker who stood up, and he proposed that there should be a 50% of cabinet seats should be kept for women, and I think we'd all like to see more women in cabinet, but his reason was that women themselves lack the ability to push themselves in the political arena. So obviously he hasn't met the woman who organised that conference.
I wouldn't make the point though in relation to the lack of political reform. You know, there is legislation that's going to have gender quotas in and tickets. A bill has been passed, in effect, banning corporate donations into political life. They are huge changes that have happened.
And there is only one way to drive reform. Get yourself into government.
Just one text to finish. Pat Campbell says, does John Wilson, that's the Garda whistleblower, realise the harm he's doing to the Garda force? Of course, some penalty points may have been questionably quashed, but is this a good enough reason to damage the entire force, which can only be of benefit to the criminality of this country? So we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to all of my guests, John Halligan, Fergus Finlay, Pascal Donoghue, Mary Regan and Lucinda Creighton, and of course, John Wilson. The documentary hour is next. We're back with you next week at 1 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.